Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
There is an attack on free speech in America, and that almost sounds like a cliche. Because of my position being in the media, and because I have studied communication theory over the years, I'm very in tune with this threat to freedom of speech. Many of you may not be aware of it, because, you know, in your bars, in your homes, wherever you are, you know, the office, you can talk freely. You can bash the president. You could have bashed Biden. You could bash Trump. You can praise Trump. You can say whatever you want. You can be critical of the government, and you can't be arrested. Essentially, you can't be arrested. And this is all protected under the First Amendment. But I have warned from the beginning of this second term of President Trump that there are things happening with freedom of speech that, as a member of the media, concern me dearly. And you might not be aware of these things, and that's why I want to talk about this. At the same time that U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi is talking about maintaining integrity of the First Amendment of the Constitution, her boss, President Trump, is calling for networks to have their broadcast licenses revoked. Now, it's no secret that Donald Trump is very sensitive to criticism. I mean, he's a human. Most humans are sensitive to criticism. But it seems like he wants to manifest his anger and criticism in the form of revenge. The idea of a president of the United States taking away a broadcast license over something that the broadcast network is promoting or talking about that is negative toward the president, I mean, this is frightening, because this is the mentality of a dictatorship. What really got my attention recently was when CBS executive Bill Owens, one of the top producers of 60 Minutes, when he recently resigned, saying that he was losing his journalistic independence. Basically, he was saying they can't do what they really want to do, and they're afraid of what President Trump might do to them. The fear of the media expressing freedom of speech, the fear of the media telling the truth because a president might take away their license, to me, this is frightening. Let's see if I'm right to be afraid. Stephen Griffin is a professor of law at Tulane University. He knows all about this topic of freedom of speech. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be with you.
Am I right to be concerned?
I think in general, look, the First Amendment experts I most respect, some of them publish with the Foundation on Individual Rights and Expression. It's called FIRE. They're seriously concerned. And one of their areas of concern is sort of the pressure. I would say the Trump administration is just putting a lot of pressure on the media in general. And there are particular ideas that they're going after. Now, some of the sites where they're doing this perhaps don't seem important to some. You know, it has to do also with ideas about what's called DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. But there have been attacks even before the Trump administration by conservatives, let's say in Florida, on literally the expression of ideas. Now, examples I'm familiar with were actually struck down by the federal courts. But that shows you that they crossed the line. And it's actually interesting. I was interviewed, for recently by 60 Minutes on a topic of possibly impeaching judges. I can't help but wonder if that's one of the stories that they were pursuing, mm-hmm. and then it was suggested to them that was a bad idea.
But this idea that a threat from a president, I don't care who the president is, but a threat from the president would cause the media to hold back on something that is true or hold back on an investigation that they've done that sheds negative light on the White House. To me, this is frightening.
That's right. And I think you're correct to point out the dangers of the fact that the federal government is in charge of licensing these broadcast corporations. Now, that's something we've seen before, where at least President Nixon wanted, I'm not sure he ever went through with it, but he wanted to cause these media corporations, notably the Washington Post, which I think also owns some radio stations, he wanted to cause them trouble. This was leverage, in other words, that he could reach out and use. And yes, it's very troubling that the Trump administration would even consider this. And I don't see any basis for it other than, they don't like these what's being said or their ideas. And yeah, that's a direct violation of the First Amendment. Right.
Professor, let's go to the basics here. The First Amendment protects the rights of Americans, including the media, to speak freely about government officials. And one of the original roles of the media was to hold politicians accountable for their behavior in office. And the First Amendment gives us freedom of expression. The other thing that is really unique to America relative to the world is that in a lot of countries, the government owns the media. In this country, one of our great gems is the media is part of the free market society and regulated by the government, but not owned by the government. And there seems to be this new mentality that the government should own the media, that the government can dictate what the media says.
That's right. And if I could just add, the legal side, how we express this is that how the Supreme Court expresses it is the government can't regulate the content of speech, and the government can't discriminate on the basis of viewpoint. And any attempt to do that receives the judiciary calls the highest level of scrutiny, which means it's almost always struck down. And so the fact, if you can show that the reason you're in trouble with the government is because they're objecting, as you said, to what you say, the content, then it's a clear violation of the First Amendment. And the Supreme Court has been very consistent on this point, which is one of the reasons why First Amendment advocates are justified in getting upset.
All right, Professor, the government regulates the media. They don't regulate what is said, but there are regulations, FCC regulations, concerning profanity. So make that distinction.
It's been a while since I read those cases, but there are certain narrowly defined categories of what you might call speech that are not regarded as protected under the First Amendment. And one of them is obscenity. So it's been difficult to define, but to the extent you're saying something that's commonly regarded in society as obscene, the Supreme Court doesn't regard that as protected speech. Another example is if you don't, you're not just saying some general idea, but you target someone. Now, I'm not just talking about defamation, but when you target someone deliberately in a malign way, that's also an example of speech that is not protected. So there's a zone, a very broad zone of speech that can't be regulated on the basis of its content, but there are exceptions.
Now, let's talk about the technical part of this. If President Trump doesn't like what a network is doing, and the broadcast network continues to do it, what can he physically do to stop the network from doing that?
Well, You see, one of the things that's been going on in the background that people are really concerned about is that at the same time that President Trump is trying to do specific things, he's also trying to gain more power over what regulatory agencies do, like the FCC, like the agency that licenses media corporations. He's trying to exercise, in effect, more personal control over all of these agencies. If he's successful in that general objective, then that opens up vast possibilities for him to exercise more personal control over the decision making of these agencies. Now, that's something that's going on in the background that legal scholars are very concerned about. What's going on in the foreground is, even if he doesn't win what he's trying to do to the agencies, he can still, all presidents have the ability to try to influence determinations of what agencies do. But if they're successful, that's not the end of the road, though. A bad decision or a decision that goes against the First Amendment, that can be challenged in court. But I'm sure, I'll imagine the media corporations want their licenses renewed without the need for a long legal battle against the Trump administration. But such a battle may be exactly what the administration wants.
But the administration can't literally unplug a network, can it?
Well, the way I understand it, it could deny a license. Now, look, it would be litigated, and presumably the license would not be terminated until the litigation was over. But it's a chancy business. You're talking about something that makes, and see, these media corporations, they have a lot of different interests. For example, there's speculation that the CBS decision was influenced by, you know, their ultimate owner, which I guess is maybe Sherry Redstone. Yeah. And in other words, these media corporations are not necessarily in control of their own destiny in the sense that you know, CBS, you know, used to be sort of independent, but it's not if it's owned by some larger entity with conflicting values and other interests, like antitrust. It could be antitrust interests. It could be almost anything. Yeah. Or they want to take the company private, or they want to sell it. Look, it could be almost anything. They could have irons in the fire with the SEC, but that makes them vulnerable to pressure, not simply before the FCC, but to all these other agencies as well. And that's one of the things that's going on in the background.
All right, so is there more that a president can do with the broadcast networks, like CBS, ABC, NBC, than it can do with cable networks like Fox, CNN, and MSNBC?
I'm not aware of a sharp distinction there. They all need permission to be on the air. I could be wrong, and there could be a separate body of law devoted to cable, but I really think as long as they're generally available to the public, they have to abide the same rules. But I'm beyond my expertise at that point.
From my perspective, it was the broadcast network's use of the public airwaves, as it was declared years ago, that would make a distinction for CBS, ABC, and NBC over the cable news networks. Professor, I want to ask you about the fairness doctrine, and I'd love to hold you over through a break, but I have to ask you if you have time.
I can go for a little longer, yes.
Okay, great. All right. Because I want to talk about the fairness doctrine, and I know we can't get too deeply into it, but just we'll talk a little bit about the fairness doctrine and where we are today as a result of the fairness doctrine going away. And again, for those of you who just lead everyday lives and you feel like you've got freedom of speech, okay, you've got freedom of speech, but there are things happening with Donald Trump and the media that concerning freedom of speech are really, really scary. I'm Scoot. We'll be right back.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I'm Scoot on the air, and we're talking about freedom of speech. And I've talked about this on the show a lot recently, really since the re-election of Donald Trump, because from my perspective in the media, I see a real danger zone that we're entering when it comes to protecting freedom of speech. And again, you might not experience this in your everyday life, but you do experience the media. And if the media doesn't have freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, then our country is not properly served. And one of the gems of our American society is freedom of speech and a media that is not owned by the government. We're talking to Professor Stephen Griffin, Tulane Law Professor at Tulane University. Look, Professor, I want to just talk about this briefly. The Fairness Doctrine was in effect until, I think, 1985. Ronald Reagan had won re-election, and Ronald Reagan really ended the Fairness Doctrine, and that really led us to where we are today, because just simply put, I guess, the Fairness Doctrine basically held the media accountable to presenting both sides of an issue fairly. When that went away, that opened the door for people like Rush Limbaugh and other radio stations, TV stations as well, to present any opinion they wanted in a lopsided manner without offering equal time, correct?
I've heard this a version of the critique many times, and you know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that keep in mind, conservatives. This was a part of an early victory for what I'll call the conservative legal movement. Conservatives really went after the Fairness Doctrine as an unmistakable example of government regulation of speech. I mean, there's no way around it. It was government regulation of speech, and illustrates the really tough choices, because there's no way to really implement a doctrine of fairness without some kind of standard, and you'd have to be talking about some kind of government mandated standard. At the same time, it illustrates the benefits you can have by sort of clearing a space where everyone understands, hey, you can't put extreme stuff on without balancing it out. And it's true, once you remove the government regulator, people could go wild. I think there's some assumption that, you know, the free marketplace would balance out itself. But as you're saying, there's a good argument that didn't happen. But just keep in mind, conservatives had an argument. They had an argument based on the First Amendment itself, which was you shouldn't be regulating content in the first place.
Right. I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
The First Amendment is kind of a double-edged sword at that point. You know, that kind of the initial regulation, remember, of radio and all that is based on the idea of a limited spectrum.
Right.
But that started eroding under, you know, cable news and so forth. But you know that.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I've always found interesting is that with my show, I'm a registered independent. I describe myself as a radical moderate. I'm conservative on some issues. I'm liberal on some issues. A lot of people are uncomfortable when they can't label you either conservative or liberal, but that's not my problem. What I find interesting is those who watch Fox News and they support conservative radio and they love that and they love the theory that they can say what they want to say, but they're critical of me for expressing a different opinion. And really, what I do is no different from what the conservative, the true conservative media does, which is express an opinion. And it's really no different. And I just find it so hypocritical that so many say, well, you know, what you're doing is wrong. You need to be objective. And yet they're supporting Fox News and conservative radio.
Well, I'll tell you, even on campus, people who support a broad spectrum of views have had an extremely difficult time convincing both students mainly and faculty that's what the First Amendment is all about, a spectrum of views. There's a scholar, used to be at Princeton, now at Yale, and he's basically on the conservative or libertarian side, Keith Whittington. He's written very effectively on these issues, documenting over and over again. It's very easy to document that everyone seemed to be interested in the maximum freedom of expression to express their own views, and then they really don't want to hear anyone else's. You've got to, if you're in control of one of these public spaces, whether it's a station or a campus, you've got to embrace what you might call an ecumenical viewpoint, or you're not coming from where the First Amendment is coming from.
It just fascinates me that so many Americans are just so lacking of an understanding of what the First Amendment really represents. And the freedom to express one opinion is paralleled by the freedom to express another opinion. And it certainly is easy for Americans to support free speech when they agree with the speech. The challenge is for Americans to support free speech when they don't agree with the speech.
That's right. And in my lifetime, the most obvious example of this playing out, seemingly over and over again, is these attempts to control what goes into libraries.
Yes.
And I'm not even talking about schools, because that can be a different context, but just regular public libraries, it just plays out over and over again. Certainly, we had a conflict where I live in St. Tammany Parish. When that happens, though, there are a lot of friends of the libraries, and you know what they mean, emerge. And what happens is people find out that there's really more diversity of opinion about what should be in a library. But libraries are a good example where, there are choices to be made about what goes in them. But once you have that spectrum of views, a certain amount of toleration is called for, or the whole thing can't work.
Should we be concerned that President Trump will ignore the rulings of judges, the rulings of the courts, and move forward with an attempt to really end freedom of speech the way we know it today?
Yeah, I think that's premature. I think we're actually, I know people are talking about that, but I think we're actually a long way from any, some sort of definitive opinion by the judiciary, or really some kind of a showdown. And it's really hard to know whether the administration is interested in having some kind of showdown. Yeah. But I think in the end, good sense will prevail, partly because they don't have one or two issues before the court. They have dozens, and they want to prevail. Yeah. And that's understandable. And the courts are going to, in effect, say to them, if you want our good faith, then you have to show us good faith as far as implementing sometimes opinions you may not agree with. And I think that's the way it's going to play out.
Interesting consideration. How much pressure can the public, can the voters put on the administration to recognize that freedom of speech is a key to American society?
Well, I think there's no doubt there's a role there. Again, it's hard to convince people that there's a role for views they don't like. I think libraries are a good example, a way to get through to people that it's a balance of views and considerations. But I think it's also a mistake to think that, like, the Trump administration is above public opinion. It's way too early to conclude something like that. And so public opinion can make a difference. If people are exercised enough about this, then they can make a difference even, when we're not in an election cycle.
And we are seeing Republicans stand up and disagree with Donald Trump, which they did not do during the campaign. And Donald Trump is a very proud person who wants to always have a lot of support. So maybe vicariously through representatives, people can have a voice in this matter.
That's right. That's right. And that's what I think will happen.
Professor Stephen Griffin, professor of law at Tulane, thank you for your time, your expertise. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. Thanks very much for having me.
All right, professor. Thanks for being with us.